Listen, Mayor, when you talk about homelessness, we'd like you to say solutions, 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 and data, data, data. We call it the Seattle Spirit Framework Communication Approach.
The city is firmly behind solutions, and I think if they see solutions working, they're going to support us in the solutions.
Oh, yeah, Jelly Turka, you got it all figured out. That's all we want, some solutions, because you're just filled with them. Ain't you just filled with them? The group behind the successful effort to force the recall of the ridiculous tax on jobs says that the city needs to be held to account. I firmly agree. I will now provide a framework for ways that you want to be a serious person, you want to run for city council, you want to run on a nonpartisan platform, I'll give you one. First of all, Eric Nag.
The only reason why this was repealed today is because seven of those people that voted to repeal it are up in 2019. The city is rich with tax revenue right now. This is not a revenue or a resource issue. This is a city council that has been on a spending bender for the last few years.
Yeah, and everybody knows that. Now, let's begin with a level setting in terms of the culture here. I had a brief debate with a person on Twitter earlier today, this morning. His bio claims that he is a founding team member of some of the most iconic tech companies that you know of. One of them just stopped processing credit cards for gun stores and anyone selling gun-related merchandise. Just apparently didn't announce it. According to CNBC, didn't announce it, just stopped. They own QuickBooks and TurboTax, so if you use QuickBooks and TurboTax, you're going to want to stop using those products immediately. He said that the Magnolia Bridge, okay, the bridge people drive to get home, is a luxury item. The bridge people use to get home is a luxury item. And he said that bicycles provide a greater return on investment. We should be building more bicycle lanes and no Magnolia Bridge. And I went on to point out to the gentleman, there's not a human being alive who doesn't benefit from automobiles. Your stupid bicycles, and I own three bicycles, by the way, your stupid bicycles were brought to you by a truck. People don't deliver bikes on bikes. People don't go out and deliver air conditioning units with bicycles. Houses are not built by a bunch of people on bicycles bringing out 2x4s one by one. Airplanes are not transferred out of our city with a whole bunch of people riding the bicycles carrying the jet engines. You might be able to carry a soy beverage or maybe one of the tubes for a vape if you're super strong, a backpack filled with tubes of vape. So the level set here culturally is to understand that we can't deal with stupidity like that and insanity like that, that a bridge is a luxury item. But here's what we can deal with. He was a math guy. So he was speaking the language of mathematics, and he was trying to make a mathematical argument that bikes are more efficient. It's a flawed argument, and it's a silly argument, but at least he speaks math, so we start here. You want to hold the city to account? Put a number on the head of every homeless person. How much are we willing to spend to house them? Does that sound revolutionary? How much are you willing to spend to house every homeless person in this city? So let's say there are 11,000 homeless people, and that's what the city claims there is. Would you be willing to spend $20,000 to house every homeless person in Seattle? Yes? Okay, so how does that come out? $220 million to house them, $20,000 a piece. What was the number that the Puget Sound Business Journal quoted for 1 year of homeless services in this area? The Puget Sound Business Journal. $1.3 billion. Put a number on the head of people. Now, the number shouldn't be the same. How much are you willing to spend to house a homeless person who has been trying to work or is working? I would take someone who is right now employed and homeless And I would spend more to house that person than I would someone who is choosing to not work. Let's make a separation. Let's start to fill out a flow chart here. A family, kids, priority number one, kids get housing first. Priority number two, people who are working and trying to help their circumstance get housing next. Priority number three, people recently homeless and demonstrably nowhere else to go. Priority last, street people. People committed to living on the street get absolutely no consideration for getting into these homes. We don't do that. You want to live on the street, you demonstrate that by refusing help every single time it's offered to you. We need to make a turn here in this environment and begin to speak to the mathematics. What is the pool of money we have? And how many families, children, then families, then people working can we house? That's our universe. People who want to live in RVs and tents and shoot up and live on the streets and pay no attention to the rules and have no responsibility, we don't give a flat damn if you ever have a house. If your attitude is, I will suck everything I can out of this city, then we don't give a flat damn if you ever have a house, but you're not going to live here. You can go live in Portland. They'll have you. Los Angeles will have you. Parts of San Diego will have you. They're ruining their cities. You can go, but you're not staying here. That's a conversation starter on a mathematical basis that takes a pool of resources and appropriately applies them to the people who need them. Now, Jelly Durka, she decided she'd talk strategy.
Don't drop that Durka Durk. Hey, don't drop that Durka Durk.
And that's what she said. Now, actually, she decided that she would talk about the strategy following the repeal of the tax on jobs. Listen here.
I think this is good for Seattle. I think instead of division, we can come together for solutions. And we're going to pull together.
Did you hear what she said?
Who can do what?
Did you hear what she said? Did I tell you? It's solutions, data, solutions, data.
I think this is good for Seattle.
It's good that we passed a law, said it was the only thing that could be done, that it was going to rescue people. We spent a lot of political capital on it, but...
I think instead of division, we can come together for solutions.
Okay, solutions. I just gave you some. What's yours? I bet yours involves more money.
And we're going to pull together mayors from the region.
Oh, good. Mayors from the region because Bellevue has a homelessness problem? Nope. They enforce the loitering rules. They enforce the camper rules.
To talk about who can do what, how do we pull together, and how do we all step up?
Man, her computer programming is way, 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 way off. Now, if we had a functioning Republican Party, the framework I just applied would be used in a campaign to talk mathematically to business people like the guy I debated. Here's a pool of resources. Here's A, kids, B, families, C, people working and homeless, D, people recently made homeless, not on our list, committed street people. But what they'd have to do is be ideologues. Well, not even that. They'd have to be activists. We don't have very many activists in the Republican Party here. We have professional Republicans. Here's an example of why I say that. From the text messages yesterday, you can text the show at 800-465-8770. Todd, I was on the phone with King County Republican Party. I suggested to them some of the new tactics you've been discussing. I mentioned running candidates without R's next to their name, running ads featuring the leaders of Seattle, ISIS grandma, the choir, the gong, and the racist police station. During my conversation, I asked if the Republican Party ever run TV ads on radio or ads on radio. I was told the only ads they run are on their Facebook page with roughly 2,900 followers. To summarize the response, they said the King County Republican Party will not support candidates without an R next to their name. Okay, there you go. Professional Republican. It's not activism. It's about putting people in office who happen to have an R by their name. Now, why do I call myself an independent conservative? Because until a few weeks ago...
Our incarceration rate in the state of Washington is among the 10 lowest in the United States.
Had an R by his name. Much more to get to on the Todd Herman Show. Hardly done with the IG report. In fact, I'm just warming up. We'll go probably two segments on that. Get to some of your text messages. Todd, no, $20,000 for all of them, not $20,000 apiece. $20,000 for all of them, for 11,000 people. Okay. How much would you spend to house 11,000 people? 800-465-8770. We'll get back to the IG report next and some of your other text messages. Country Tom. You read my mind. Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. CNN speaks for the entire establishment all across the Beltway when they spin the IG report this way.
The people at the Justice Department, people at the FBI who are very concerned about how this would come across, I think have to be very relieved that the Inspector General went through the extra step of actually saying that he found no evidence to support the idea of political bias. I think that's a huge finding for the legitimacy of this investigation because, look, they looked at all of the facts.
Reading directly from the report that, according to CNN and Christopher Wray and according to Chuckie Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, contains no evidence of any political bias, I read verbatim. We were deeply troubled by text messages sent by Strzok and Page that were potentially indicated or created the appearance that the investigated decisions were impacted by bias or improper considerations. Most of the text messages raising such questions pertain to the Russia investigation, which was not part of this review. Now, you should underline that mentally. Not part of this review. Is there another review? Nonetheless, when one senior FBI official, Strzok, who was helping to lead the Russia investigation at the time, conveys in a message to another senior FBI official, Page, that will stop candidate Trump from being elected. After another extensive text message between the two disparaging candidate Trump, it is not only indicative of a biased state of mind, implies a willingness to take official action to impact the presidential candidate's electoral prospects. This is antithetical to the core values of the FBI and the Department of Justice. Moreover, as we describe in Chapter 9 in assessing Strzok's decision to prioritize the Russia investigation over following the mid-year related investigative lead discovered on Wiener's laptop in 2016, these text messages led us to conclude that we did not have confidence that Strzok's decisions were free from bias. CNN?
The people at the Justice Department, people at the FBI who were very concerned about how this would come across, I think have to be very relieved that the Inspector General went through the extra step of actually saying that he found no evidence to support the idea of political bias. I think that's a huge finding for the legitimacy of this investigation because, look, they looked at all of the facts.
The most shocking thing to come out of this is that the Inspector General, who allegedly wrote the report, has apparently not read the report. I just quoted political bias. Oh, well, that was in the Russia. They were talking about Russia. Were they? This is the same Strzok who changed the very definition of breaking national security laws from Jimmy Comey's original speech. Strzok changed it to an inert phrase that is non-legal, meaning it was a description of bad behavior, but not the word needed to ascribe it to a named crime. Now, she still committed the crime. She still committed the national security felonies. But he removed the word. That's why Rush calls him Strzok. Trey Gowdy, this is important. Gowdy, a week ago, was defending the FBI. They did exactly what you would have wanted them to do.
What a dark day it is for the FBI and the DOJ, two institutions our country desperately needs. We desperately have to be able to have confidence in them. And this level of bias and animus, not only did he want to stop the Trump campaign, he wanted to stop the Trump presidency.
No bias. No indication of bias. Christopher Wray, and I haven't even asked Tom to get these sound bites. I don't even want to hear his voice. FBI, this report did not find any evidence of political bias. Huh. It didn't. I just read it. One example, and I can, this 124 pages I'm through now. But we're going to hold employees accountable for potential misconduct. No, you're not. We're going to make sure every FBI agent understands a lesson from this report. The lesson being what, Chris? That your structure will cover for itself? That your own IG is going to cover for you? Is that the lesson? Because that's kind of what everyone else is getting. That's what everyone else is taking away from this. So the text message is 800-465-8770. You can hit that up. It's brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. Christopher Ray just lost all credibility. I agree. Also for the text messages. And I should trust the FBI to investigate me? No thanks. I don't trust them at all. Are you being investigated from the FBI? If so, that just made news. I'd like to know that. Text message 0532. We love your show, Todd. Thank you. But on the topic, thank you for that. On the FBI from 7314. Todd, the report mentions potential bias by Strzok. The idea that Comey wasn't politically biased, I agree, is completely ridiculous. Pardon me, that's from 0817. Oh, speaking of Comey, did you know that Jimmy Comey told investigators that he did not know that Huma Abedin was married to Anthony Weiner? Now, you want just, okay, there's that, but you want one more piece of evidence of the bias? I'll give it to you in the names of the investigations. What did they call the Hillary Clinton secondary email investigation? Mid-year review, like you would have in a college or in a work environment. Up, time for your mid-year review. In other words, just checking a box. It's not, this isn't your final grade. It's not what your bonus is going to be based upon. It's just a mid-year review. What did they call the Trump investigation? Crossfire Hurricane. From Jumpin' Jack Flash. I was born in a crossfire hurricane. The names say it all. One, check the box so we can pretend we investigated Hillary. Two, start a crossfire hurricane to take this Trump guy down. After all, Peter Strzok told the woman he was having an extramarital sexual affair with that he would prevent Trump, that they would prevent Trump from being president. It is a sad day in America. All right, we'll come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. Shift gears into something I've been wanting to get to. Speaking of a sad day, there are actually coaches and athletes fighting back this time. Yeah, you kind of know where this is headed. About a track championship. You want to hear how they're fighting back? I want to ask you, how long is a certain coach going to keep his job? Hey, thanks for listening to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. It's Todd Herman Show. Sometimes I gotta warn ya.
Well, I don't mean to piss you off with things I might say. So when I try to shut my mouth, they come out anyway. So when I speak my mind, that's when we connect. Yeah, but that's not politically correct.
So one of my major frustrations with professional Republicans, particularly professional Republicans of the cowardly type, like Senator Joe Fain in Kent, who is running for re-election and will probably win because the Republican Party, of course, not going to run anyone against Senator Joe Fain. Joe Fain is the sort of Republican who will take money from what I understand, I've heard, that he calls the gay TM. Now, this isn't your average everyday gay person who is walking around doing what they do, living life and being happy, hopefully, and fulfilled, hopefully, and harming nobody, almost likely, right? Almost 99% likely. It's not your ordinary transsexual person, someone with gender dysphoria. I was just having a conversation with one of our transgender listeners yesterday on private message. And he's just living his life, doing his thing, going through kind of a bad, tough time on something, and he just shared it with me. It's not about that. The gay TM is a militant sexual left. And the militant sexual left exists to deconstruct norms. And they are aligned with the great intersectionality beast. And the great intersectionality beast is the same beast that has constructed the myth that the problem with the world is white people and the problem with white people is they're white. And they've joined into this group that is scapegoating and fear-mongering around whiteness, the myth of whiteness. We never talk of blackness or Asianness or Germanness. I guess Germans are supposed to be white, right? Isn't that the way it works? So they're part of all that. And the gay TM goes to guys like Fain. And they say, look, we won't do anything against you if you just do our bidding. And so Fain does. The Human Rights Commission says, we want men with beards and penises to be allowed to shower with little girls. And Joe Fain goes, yeah, sounds good to me. I'm good with that. Cool. Let's it happen. Because he's cowardly and craven. Oh, but he's good on taxes. Yeah, he is. Well, you can be as good on taxes as you want to be. When you allow the revolution like this to fester, you enjoy that little tiny bit of grip on sanity you have on a taxation basis, while around you, society and all the norms crumble, and you generation after generation build a society who doesn't remember its founding, doesn't remember its basis, and is in fact believing outright in complete lies. You go a couple generations down the road, Joe, maybe even a generation down the road, Joe Fain, you'll end up with people who have no ability to construct the truth or to understand the truth, because truth becomes what the leaders tell them it is, what the agitators tell them it is. That's the ultimate goal. Make no mistake. That's the ultimate goal of the hardcore left. We will control all truth, right? Very Orwellian, and yet here before us. Let me give you an example. This is the politically incorrect part. Out of Connecticut. Terry Miller went out and won a big state championship in track. Terry, during the 100-yard dash, smoked the competition. Finished in 11.72 seconds, killed the 200-meter dash. 24.17 seconds, set two state records. One of his friends, Andrea Yearwood, dominated at the competition, finishing in second place in the 100-meter dash. Oh, what's the news? Terry and Andrea had been competing as boys a few months back. Just a few months ago, they were boys. During the winter indoor track season, they were boys. Now they're girls. A coach has actually spoken out about this. And I wonder how long this coach keeps his job. Coach Brian Collins told the Connecticut Post that he agrees it's not fair for Miller and Yearwood to compete on the girls' team. He was among a group of people who signed two petitions. Yes, there are two petitions going around. But now they're girls. Has their hip height changed? No. Has their lung capacity changed? No. Has their muscle composition changed? No. Did either of them have operations to remove their genitalia? Unclear. Looking at the pictures, I'd say no. Do they have different bone density and ability to rebound? Because men tend to have more of that than women? No. Have they been on estrogen for a number of years to try to counteract the testosterone? No. They're just now they're girls. Put yourself in the position of a young athlete who has worked her entire life to get to the state championship. And here are two boys, muscled up boys, strong looking boys, not horribly fast boys, by the way. They're not horribly fast boys. They are faster than the girls because they're boys. You have been spending your life running and sprinting. You're the girl who gets behind a Toyota pickup with someone sitting in the bed of the truck, and that person puts a rope around your waist and holds onto both sides of it. You run your 200-yard dash as fast as you think you can run, and then the truck speeds up a little bit and pulls you. You feel like you're going to fall over. You feel like your lungs are going to burst. And then your coach says, see, you can run faster. You're the person who puts on ankle weights and a weight vest and runs sandhill sprints up and down to increase your leg strength and your explosiveness. You do plyos until your hips hurt. You skip out on going to dances, etc., having social time, etc., because you're the one busy at night stretching or getting the homework done you didn't get done during your two or your three days. You're the ones whose parents have paid for a private coach. Maybe you've worked to have a private coach. You are headed towards a championship that season, and then a guy who that winter was competing as a guy but couldn't cut it, and another guy who was competing that winter as a guy but couldn't cut it, comes over and says, hey, how you doing? I'm a girl now. Now I'm going to race you. And Joe Fain and professional Republicans all around have nothing to say. They caused it. They started the fire. They set the table. They set this all in motion, and they're silent. And Joe Fain and people like that, their moral cowardice knows no bounds. They're not going to respond to any of this. And yet, it was 100% foreseeable. We'll come back and wrap up the day with a personal note. Academy.
Down on Main Street.
Show on AM 770 KTTH and on the Greater East Side 94.5 FM. On a personal note tonight, have you ever had a mentor in your life, truly a mentor? I have a mentor of mine who is a businessman. He is a brilliant, brilliant CEO, multiple-time successful serial entrepreneur. He took me under his tutelage when I was starting my first company, which was an internet radio company. And the way it all happened is John is his name. John got a call from a venture capitalist who had met with us. And he called John, who had a big background in building streaming music products. He'd sold one of his companies for a lot of money to a big public company. And if I sound like I'm masking his identity, I am, because he was a very liberal guy. And I don't want to besmirch him by being Todd Herman's mentor in tech, although he's very proud of our relationship, and I am of ours as well. The venture capitalist said to John, look, I just met with a guy who's either insane, like literally insane, or he's really, really smart and has figured something out. But I need you to figure out if he can actually do what he says he's going to do. Now, what we were intending to do was to build an internet radio network. And I got a tweet. When I was filling in for Rush last time, someone wrote in and said, oh, dear Todd and Rush Limbaugh, there's no such thing as a radio network. An internet radio network had never existed. You're wrong, pal. The way we did this and we intended to do it was create one base of music and an ability to customize that stream, that those streams, those channels for any website, so that it had custom audio, their names running in it, their ads running in it, their colors on it. We got to the point where we could launch a custom radio product, internet radio product for a company without ever having to meet with them. And we could launch it in a period of hours. It was really, really a great company, and we just didn't time it right. And that's just sometimes happens. So when I met John, he was a guy who took me into Silicon Valley. He agreed to take the project on. He did it for equity, meaning a piece of the company. He was like a guy I'd never met before. We grew up in such different worlds. He grew up in Midwest and grew up around people who went to operas and people who, you know, were on the boards of big charities and symphonies. And I mean, don't get me wrong. John's a guy who also played football, albeit in the Ivy Leagues, but strong, big, tall man, very manly guy, but very quiet, very thoughtful. Never had been around someone like me who came up through the world of being sort of a street fighter person. I mean, not literally a street fighter, but in the way that I got into the business. And my first lesson in who he was really came through in the oddest way. We were having breakfast at the DoubleTree Suites. Now I'm forgetting the name of the place where they used to have the buffet breakfasts. And I had only had eggs. And it came with my room, so you could get whatever you wanted. And I gave him my room key. I said, oh, go up to the buffet and get something. And he started up and goes, wait a minute, did you pay for this? I said, well, it came with my room, and all I had is eggs. He goes, oh, no. I can't do this. I have to pay. And I said, well, I only had eggs. He goes, no, I can't. I have to pay. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this is the most honorable guy I've ever met. He was unwilling to go get like a slice of toast, so he went and he paid for breakfast. And I've never forgotten that lesson ever. And it was John who was there when I made one of the most insane blunders, one of the stupidest things I've ever done in my life. And I thought I was toast. I signed the contract at lunch. And it doesn't sound like a big deal, but it was stupid. Because the contract had in it a mathematical formula that I could not understand. And I thought I understood it, but I didn't. And I cost the company an enormous amount of money in a contract I shouldn't have signed. It was beyond stupid. It was arrogant. And I did it to act like a big man. Because I happened to be having lunch with one of the world's most famous CEOs in tech. He came to the meeting. And I wanted to act like a big man. I told John I'd signed the contract. It was 11 o'clock at night. And he read it. And he said, you may have just cost you this company. We're sitting in this hotel room. We were in San Jose, California. We talked through it. He gave me the implications of what it meant. He said, here's what you're going to do. You're going to email all of the partners and explain what you've done. You're going to explain the economic implications of this. You're also going to decide that you won't ever sign another contract without me or the board reviewing it, not for the next year, or your CFO. Okay? That's what you're going to do. Then you're going to call each of the board members tonight. I said, it's 11:30. He goes, yep, tonight. You deliver bad news first. We went through that process. The partners were furious, but they stood by me because I did that. The man taught me so much, but one of the most fundamental things he taught me is that bad news delivered first will make the good news more believable. It will make everything you say more believable. Those partners stuck with us all the way through the sale of the company. To this day, they are friends of mine. To this day, we communicate. And now on three occasions, they have backed me again in other companies because of one guy who met someone who at the time had a ponytail down the middle of his back and an earring and motorcycle boots. But man, did he have a great plan for internet radio. And in my defense, a brilliant team, far smarter than I'll ever be. John also taught me how to value them. And the first thing he taught me is the thing that I teach every young entrepreneur. First thing, never confuse the team's intelligence with yours. Never think you're the one that's doing it all. Never get into that. And always allow your people to begin to lead you. Want to thank John for all the years of being a mentor. I'd love to hear about the mentors you've had in your life. This is the Todd Herman Show. We air every weekday, 3 to 6 p.m. I'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Be well, be strong, and be kind.